And I've even had a few patients who have reported to me that they've even reversed early stages of macular degeneration. I've had people who've had significant dry eye, and you know, dry eye can be pretty debilitating. It can be very uncomfortable. It can affect your vision. And yeah, you can reverse it by the proper human diet.
Hello, friends. Thank you so much for joining me again today. My guest this afternoon is someone who I share a very special bond with. It is an elite club out here of people with unpronounceable last names that start with a W. And today we've got two of them for you. Myself, Ben Wehrman, or is it Wehrman? Or is it Wehrman? After 29 years, I don't even know, guys. Even people in my own family pronounce it differently. And my very special guest, and I'm going to swing for it here, Dr. Lisa Wiedemann. Thank you so much for joining me today. Did I nail it?
So glad to be here with you, Ben. Thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. And the way that I like to start all of these is pretty much just get your story, your health story, your journey in becoming a doctor, and the handle that you use on social media, Carnivore Doctor. People see that and they think you're crazy. You only eat meat, you wild person? What's up with that? So why don't you give us a little backstory there? What happened?
Well, yeah, so I guess I do kind of fly my own freak flag. But as time has gone on and the more I've researched this and the more I understand how absolutely optimal this way of eating is, I say everybody else out there is eating freaky and I'm eating the natural, normal way a human animal should be eating. So we will put that out there. And the fact that I'm at a point where I really don't care what anybody thinks about what I put in my mouth and chew and swallow. It's very interesting. Nobody cared when I was binging on cookies and ice cream and pizza and pasta and garbage. And now all of a sudden when I'm eating, you know, red meat, seafood and eggs, I'm about ready to kill myself, they think, because of the cholesterol and, you know, on and on. I've heard it all and I've done this for over 15 years now. So yeah, I've heard it all, but my personal story is, I'm an optometric physician. I've been an eye doctor for over 33 years. And I've been a carnivore solid for just over 15 years. And I was so fortunate to have found this. I suffered most of my life with, disordered eating, sugar addiction, carb addiction, food addiction, volume addiction, binge eating, you name it. I went through it. I was trying to lose weight any which way I could, cabbage soup diet, you know, all sorts of things because I knew being fat wasn't healthy and that I struggled. I struggled around food and I didn't know why. I had no clue that there was such a thing as actually being addicted to sugar and had no clue that it was even more addictive than cocaine and heroin. And I was one of the unfortunate ones that got dealt those cards in life. But I think it all started when I think around second grade, I was gifted an easy bake oven. And it went downhill from there, you know, riding my bike to the 5 and 10 with my girlfriends to get the pixie sticks and the everlasting gobstoppers and, you know, Charleston chews. I could go on and on, Jolly Ranchers. And, you know, I think really, unfortunately for me, I feel like it wasted so much precious time in my life. Money, time, health. And I just kind of, I just kept searching for an answer. I just couldn't believe that I couldn't stop this. I couldn't understand the behavior. And, you know, I'm a smart person. Here I am going through college and then I'm getting into grad school and I am still not figuring this out. And, you know, it came down to, you know, I was realizing I was doing things very secretively, and that's a surefire sign of an addiction, you know, hoarding food, waiting for to be by yourself, waiting for people to leave or go to sleep or hiding wrappers, like all of these behaviors. I was like, really dumbfounded that I couldn't figure it out. And so I just kept persevering through so much disordered eating and so much of myself witnessing it worsening, because as all addictions do, they worsen over time. And I was just diligent in, back then, this is before Facebook, before YouTube, I'm just surfing the web randomly back in 2009. And I came across a forum of people who called themselves Zeroing In on Health. And I just was mesmerized. I just started reading on there and reading the different little journals of people who were in there, and reading about all these people who were getting healthy for all sorts of different reasons, you know, curing depression, anxiety, diabetes, skin issues, Crohn's, you know, all sorts of gut issues. And boing, there was two women in there who chatted in their journal about their disordered eating and how their eating disorder went away with this. And wow, did I perk up? And I thought, well, these people are rather crazy. They eat meat and drink water. What the heck? But I'm jumping in both feet. I said, what do I have to lose? And I will continue to research and understand what this is and why it's working. And such a great, great group of people who, they were studying different works of Vilmar Stefansson, you know, Fat of the Land, Not by Bread Alone, the writings of Owsley the Bear Stanley, who had been doing this way of eating for like 30, 40 years, like something crazy. And as I did it, I was just blown away. Like, wow. The longer I did it and more people joined in. And then we started having meetups, either we in Philadelphia, Charles was running half marathons wherever he ran. We'd meet at a churrascaria, you know, where the gauchos come around and slice off the meat. And I was meeting these people face to face. And boy, back then it was like, all right, this is kind of scary. I'm getting in my car and I'm driving to a restaurant to meet some internet people. But wow, it was so empowering. And just, it's just been an incredible journey for me, because I just became so passionate to try to spread the word, because I started then understanding there's so many things in life that we are told the wrong information. And that I started thinking, oh my gosh, I have to start doing the opposite of what they out there tell you. Like, I don't dare put sunscreen on my skin. I don't avoid the sun. I don't avoid red meat. I don't pay attention to cholesterol, because cholesterol is good. Every cell in our body needs cholesterol. And it was such a horrible, horrible thing the pharmaceutical industry did to us by, in their greed to make money, just kept pounding away to everybody that cholesterol is the demon and cholesterol is the cause of heart disease. And it's just not true. So yeah, that's, I'm going to say in a long nutshell, that's where I came from. But I'm so passionate to spread the word. So what, I'll tell you quickly one more thing, if you don't mind, I'll just keep going.
Absolutely. Love long stories. Have at it.
So what ended up happening way back 15 years ago, you know, I'm part of this Zeroing In on Health group, and I am pinned, each night I'm heading up to my computer. I can't wait to continue reading in the journals and add to mine. And this whole thing's going, and I wanted to shout it from the rooftops. I wanted to tell people, but nobody really wants to listen to some little wackadoodle here who's just eating meat. I mean, come on. Of course, everybody knows you need fruit and vegetable, right? Oh, and fiber. Don't forget the fiber, right? So yeah. So I just kind of, went quiet. I mean, I was still in the group, but then it switched into Facebook, and then new people were coming in. They're asking all the same questions. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go live my life. And, then, probably about, I guess almost about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, I was on Instagram and I happened upon seeing Sean Baker, who had just been on Joe Rogan. And I was reading in the comments after he was interviewed about his carnivore journey. And these people were writing, well, that's all well and good now, but it's not sustainable and you cannot do this long term. And I was like, oh, let me just raise my hand here, please. Because we got 15 years under our belt, buddy, and I've got some words for you. So I just, you know, just on a whim, I said, well, you know what, let me create a separate Instagram account where I'm going to follow these other carnivore people and be able to comment. So I came up with the name Carnivore Doctor, and I started giving my two cents, and my account just kept growing because people were very intrigued and curious how a medical professional is actually doing this. You know, somebody with, you know, let's call it a level of intelligence and who's not wanting to risk her own health. Let's have at it. Let me hear your reasoning. And so, yeah, I've turned really just my passion. I said, if I can help one person out of the hellhole I was in, what I suffered, if I can help somebody out of that, then this is all worth it. All of the time and energy and effort I put into all of the content is for me to try to just help expose this so that, you know, because mainstream media is not telling you to eat lots of red meat and get outside and ground your feet. And I'm probably one of the less than 1% of eye physicians who will tell you, you better try to not put your sunglasses on outside because we want the sun in our eyes. We really do. It's a signal to our brain. It's not, our eyes are not just for vision. So it just keeps spreading, Ben. It keeps spreading. I just keep, you know, discovering more and more truths that I want others to know about, and I can't keep my mouth shut. So here we are.
And that's why we love you and the other doctors out there, like Dr. Chafee and Dr. Kiltz. I had both of them on recently as well. And it's just, I can only imagine that process of coming to terms with the fact that all of those years of medical school you went to was basically teaching you the exact opposite of the truth. It was just a total indoctrination camp. And you come out of it and you, usually by your own health issues, like I know Ken Berry talked about how, you know, he was overweight, dealing with all these issues. Philip Ovadia, you mentioned, also overweight, dealing with a bunch of medical issues. And it's kind of like a stereotype now. Everyone has a fat doctor because they're not in good shape generally. And it's because they're following their own advice of eating lots of plants and not eating meat and not getting in the sun. Or if you do, you better wear your sunscreen, like you said. It's just so much bad advice out there. And so I'm very curious, what was the moment? Do you remember the exact moment you were just, it kind of all hit you where you realized that all that schooling was really for naught and you had to completely make a 180?
You know, it really came about very gradually. Like as the whole food thing revealed itself to me, and then as more time went on and I realized as an eye doctor, I need to get to the root cause. Why is your eye dry? Why are your eyes red from dryness? Why are your meibomian glands not functioning properly? Guess what? It's because of what you're eating, and it's the processed food. It's the seed oils. So many people suffering from macular degeneration now. I mean, you know, about over 30 years ago when I started in practice, there was nowhere near the amount of patients with macular degeneration as in the past few years. As you know, it's just mind-boggling, and it can't be from old age, because there was just as many old people 30 years ago as there are now, and it's our food system. And yeah, I did a real extensive YouTube video about macular degeneration.
I watched it. It's excellent. Yeah, I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, and because Dr. Chris Kenobi, an ophthalmologist, actually left practice and dedicated like 8 years of his life to the research of really determining so much of how to halt the progression and prevent the macular degeneration. I've even had a few patients who have reported to me that they've even reversed early stages of macular degeneration. And, you know, this is important to me, that I feel that I was not taught this. And I was taught to tell people that they need to take this ARIDS2 vitamin, you know, lutein and zeaxanthin. And then I, through research and speaking with Dr. Kenobi, realized that there is no benefit with that. And you really need to look into these synthetic vitamins that the doctors are saying, okay, you got to start taking this. And these people, these, you know, all these patients are hanging on to the hope that, okay, I'm going to pop these, you know, supplements and it's going to be okay. And it's not, it's, you know, so important that people actually understand what's going on. And again, we're not taught that in school. And, you know, I've had people who've had significant dry eye, and, you know, dry eye can be pretty debilitating. It can be very uncomfortable. It can affect your vision. And yeah, you can reverse it by the proper human diet. But we're told as eye doctors, we write the script for the medication. There's Restasis, there's Xiidra, there's medications, right? And the lubricant tears, and we're just throwing Band-Aids on. We need to get to root cause of these things.
Absolutely. And I'm so excited to dive into the more of the mechanics of that, because that's what you do so well in your videos, which again, I'll throw them in show notes for people. Go check out her channel. Super good information with like long slide decks of visuals and things that are very, very easy to understand. So just wrapping up the story part, you've been doing this for 15 years. You're not dead yet. looking, feeling great. And you're turning 60 this year as well. Is that correct?
Yes, I will be 60 in December. I still flip cartwheels on the beach in a bikini. So there's something, and with no medications, no diagnosis, and, you know, feeling great. Lifting weights is important, just twice a week, 30 minutes, doing a slow burn method. There's a lot of little things that just over the years I'm really finding out. I'm attempting to find out how to just be able to keep doing what I want to do into old age, hiking, biking, whatever it is. You have to really take things seriously and be willing to make a change. Cause I know most people are sitting there drinking their coffee and eating their, you know, their chips and not having a clue that this stuff is really not healthy. Nobody likes to hear that coffee isn't healthy because everybody does it, but it's an addictive drug and it's a pesticide and it is not good for your microbiome bathing it in that stuff. It's a seed. It's not a bean. And, you know, I just try to educate. I have a membership group and we talk about all aspects of, you know, what it is, what it means for each of us to reach our optimal health. And it's not easy because, you know, I say the rules are simple, but it's not easy. And, you know, change is hard and we are creatures of habit and we like routine and we like to belong and we like to fit in. And when you discover this and you become a bit of a outlier, let's put that to say it mildly, things change a bit and it's okay, especially the family dynamic, the friends dynamic, the traditions and the holidays. And it's really not easy. I don't make light of it because everything revolves around food, Ben. You know that, right? It's like, where are we going? What are we eating? What are we having? You know, and it's very interesting. And that's why I also, for maybe any of your listeners who might be able to relate a little bit to my story as far as the draw to eat, and we eat for emotional reasons, and we eat out of boredom or stress or anxiety or whatever it is. But some of us have learned to turn to food for that dopamine hit. And there's all sorts of cross addictions. There's a lot of alcoholics who are sober and they have cross addicted onto food. And it's just really important that you understand that this is one of the most difficult addictions to overcome because it is everywhere. You can't buy a hammer in Home Depot without having Kit Kats and M&Ms in your face. And people at different events or family things or holidays. And even though you might have declared, I don't eat that anymore, people, oh, you have to have it. What do you mean you're never going to have this? Come on. Nobody would do that to an alcoholic.
Have some fun. Come on.
Yeah. You only live once. Nobody would do that to an alcoholic or a drug addict, right? Start offering them their drug of choice, right? But it's okay to offer me, you know, Aunt Sue's apple crumble a la mode, right? Because people don't understand it. They don't recognize it as an actual addiction. And it's no joke. It's, you have to really have a plan in place, and you have to understand that, at least from my world and the people that I coach, abstinence is the answer, not moderation. And a single bite of cookie, you know, they say, you know, one's too many and 1,000's not enough. So it's very difficult though to come to that realization, because most people have no clue that this is an actual addiction.
Absolutely. And I'm glad that you're bringing this addiction table. I can't wait to get to the I stuff, but this is super important for people, because I think pretty much everyone out there has something that fits that mold that you described, where you find yourself doing things secretly, like hiding that you're doing things. And to me, the simplest definition that I follow is, if you know something is not serving you, it's bad for you, but you continue to do it, then I consider that an addiction. I think it's really that simple. And throughout my process of doing carnivore, and I started last September, so I'm about 10 months now, I've definitely sprinkled things in here and there. Just mostly as an experiment. I'll get my journal out and see, I wonder what happens to my body if I, you know, have a mango after a few months of being strict lion diet. And when I was in Mexico, for example, they had, you know, they get tons of free fruit in this place I was living. And so I had lion diet for a month, and then I wonder what happens if I have a mango tonight. I used to have that like every day. So I had a mango, and I can feel the differences in the next couple of days. My eating pattern gets kind of whacked out. I crave sweetness more, and the meat is less satisfying too. It's like, as I'm eating the steak, I just like wish I had some more sweet things to have with it. It just becomes a little bit more of a struggle to get through these meals, because your brain is all of a sudden brought into it instead of your actual like body's nourishment mechanisms.
The true
hunger, emotional.
The true hunger signals get really lost when there's, let's say, fruit and sweetener involved. And, you know, so many people cross addict onto stevia because everybody says, oh, it's natural, it's fine. And it's really not. If you dive deep and get past all of the money, manufacturers, products and all that, and you really dive deep, I say that's, it's really not something that our bodies are intended to have. I say it's like changing seats on the Titanic. You're still going down. You're still going to have cravings. You're still going to have that. And what I say, you won't have peace around food. And I also talk about, people have to be very cautious coming off of their, let's say, sugar sweet addiction. And I've had people cross addict onto binge watching episodes on Netflix, like just spending 6-7 hours, and they go, I have literally cross addicted, like, because we are looking to have an outlet for emotion. And it's interesting because we have to try to decide, well, all right, I'm off of this addiction, and now where does it go? And what am I doing? Because, you know, people can get addicted to exercise, and that's, you know, obviously a little healthier than a lot of other addictions, but that also can be very unhealthy and does not lead to a balanced life. If you're out there, you know, doing 6 hours of exercise a day, because that's a whole other addiction. And, you know, shopping, gambling, there's all sorts of different things that happen, and we have to be really aware of it.
Yeah. And it all really comes down to your brain. Like those are all mental things. When you're addicted to something and just connected to it, like you have an emotional connection to it. And this is why so many people who go on a carnivore diet and do have those other addictions that are outside of food, even, but let alone the ones that are in food, they start to dissipate when they go on a carnivore diet, because their brain is healing. They're giving more fat to their brain. It's able to process things better. And it's very common for these completely, you know, different addictions like smoking or alcohol or one of the ones you mentioned to just become much easier to manage once people just fix their diet and are just eating lots of fatty meat. And it really builds on itself as positive momentum when they see themselves getting healthier too. And just like they feel better, they can just go through the world better. And it gives them more motivation to like kick off these habits. They actually have the ability to, they have more control and are able to do that. And I think anyone out there who's dealing with any sort of addiction really can get so much value out of that.
Yeah. And I think that it's really important to note that there's so many people who have turned to carnivore and actually realized that they were then able to give up alcohol, whereas it was a huge struggle in the past. And, you know, I try to tell people it really is part of the sugar addiction, the alcohol is. And alcohol is a serious toxin. It's a carcinogen. It's not well exposed to us as such, but it does increase your risk of 4 different types of cancer. It is toxic to your liver, and it's no joke. It should not be this fun little social drink that we all laugh about and think that it's okay. But I think there's so much validity to getting over addictions when you have a solid nutritional plan that gets rid of the brain inflammation, gets rid of the mental fog, the depression, the anxiety. You can think clearer and move forward with your plan and understand that. And I always thought to myself as I came off of this addiction that I said, I have to be very careful about what they either call transfer addiction or cross addiction. And I was super careful as far as alcohol, because I still at that point 15 years ago would socially drink like maybe 1 or 2 drinks a month. Like I wasn't a heavy drinker, but it got to the point where I thought, why am I even doing this? I don't need this. I don't want this. And I tell people one of the best things, because it is very socially difficult for a lot of people, especially if you have a partner, spouse who you have happy hour each day with, or a group of friends where you all go out and, you know, share in, you know, it's a bring your own and everybody's bringing bottles. Now all of a sudden you're not drinking. And it really is very interesting to try to navigate that kind of situation. And I just say one of the best things to say is, you know, I just realize I don't feel good when I eat that, or I don't feel good when I drink. And I've just decided that I'm going to do a 90-day challenge and I feel great. And then the next time you see them, whether it's 80 days or 100 days later, yeah, this 90-day challenge is going great. I feel great. And that's just the way it has to be. Nobody has control over what you put in your mouth. And you shouldn't really care what other people think about what you put in your mouth. But I know, I get it. People want to fit in, belong, be one of the, you know, they want to be the part of the team, and it makes it very difficult.
The big pharma, big food, big government, you know, mass has really forced this to become an emotional thing. It's been a team effort to make this something that is completely normalized. And so it's definitely an uphill battle for people who are in that. And I think that definitely the first step is just trying to make sure you're in an environment where it's not around you all the time, you know. And I really give huge credit to the people who do the carnivore diet when there's people eating sugar and carbs all around them in a family, for example. Like there are definitely people out there who do it alone and their family members don't want to join them. That's tough. So that's really, really cool. But it's so much easier when you just, you know, can clear out the whole house that you live in of all these things that, that you're trying to give up, because then they're not always there looking at you, just trying to pull you in.
Right.
So there's strategies for sure. Really glad we got to go down that tangent. I think that will really help a lot of people, because pretty much everyone out there has something they're trying to kick. So hopefully that is good information. I want to get into some eye stuff, because this is my favorite thing to go to your content for, just learning about eyesight and how diet is such a huge part of it. Because that definitely blew my mind when I first heard about it, because like everyone else, I don't think that what I eat has to do with my vision. Like, that doesn't make sense. They're different things, but you have a very different opinion on that. So why don't you break down the relationship between what you're eating and your eyesight and your eye health in general?
Yes. One of the biggest things to really relay about that entire topic is you have to think about our bodies are a very complex system, right? And every organ system, whether it's the skin, the eyes, the liver, the GI tract, the brain, all of these things, right? Our bodies are meant to evolve, right? And to heal any ills. So we get cut, it heals. A virus, we get a fever to spike it so we can kill off the virus. And as we remove toxins, as we wisen up and figure out how we should be eating, whether it's keto, ketovore-ish, carnivore, carnivore-ish, whatever anybody decides is ideal, all pretty much animal-based, though. I can't imagine somebody thinking vegetarianism is healthy, but I know a lot of people do. But in any case, once you have removed the sugars, the grains, the processed foods, the seed oils, and I even include nuts and seeds are high in linoleic acid. Everybody thinks nuts are so healthy. I'm like, no, they're actually not. Don't eat spinach either. It's full of oxalates. Do your research, people. But once you get down to what you understand for yourself is healthy eating, and you've eliminated anything that comes in a box, a bag, a bottle, or a jar, and you stay consistent. We don't keep having cheat weekends and cheat weeks and cheat meals and all this stuff, but you stay consistent. Your body wants to heal. So if you have, let's say, autoimmune issue, right? Arthritis, which affects our eyes. It typically will give us uveitis. It's a type of inflammatory infection of the eye, which if somebody gets that in their eyes, we send them for testing to figure out if they have an underlying systemic autoimmune issue, which again, this is root cause, but then why do you have this autoimmune issue? Well, you have this autoimmune issue because your body is starting to attack parts of your body and you need to clean up your diet. And that in turn is going to solve the eye problem, right? And I have a lot of people who say, please, can you tell me, is this going to help my glaucoma? Please, can you tell me, is this going to help my cataracts? Please, can you tell me, is this going to help my blepharitis, right? I get so many questions like that. And you have to imagine that if I have a patient sitting in the exam chair, and let's just say it's a typical patient, and let's say the person's, I'll just throw out 42 years old, significant dry eye, fairly miserable with dry eye, but just says, you know, I've got this gritty feeling and my eyes are tearing and what can I do, doc? And typically it's, okay, here's some lubricant tears. You're going to use them 4 times a day, right? Well, if I said to that person, you know what? I know this sounds crazy, but go home, wipe out your pantry, wipe out your refrigerator. I want you to eat meat, seafood, and eggs and drink water, okay? And then come back in 6 months and let's see how you are. They'd think I've got, you know, two heads coming out of my shoulders, right? And that's not going to fly. So therein lies the issue where it's so interesting because people come and say to me, all right, is this going to help my, you know, glaucoma? Is this helping this and that? And it comes, oops, sorry, hang on. It comes down to having to really think about what I said just prior to this. Our bodies are here to heal everything. It's not going to heal a digestive tract for some person and reverse somebody's diabetes and then just ignore the eye, right? The eye is another system just like all the other systems. So to add this to that though, I do have the advantage of the fact that I am an eye doctor. I've had a lot of people message me who have turned to carnivore for other significant reasons, whether it was their arthritis or obesity or diabetes or Crohn's disease, whatever it is, the why that made them cry that to figure this out and come to this way. I've had some of those people then write to me and say, you know, I've been carnivore for a year and a half now because of this, but my prescriptions got less and I don't have dry eye anymore. And I was like, wow, that's awesome. So what I did is I started collecting all of these anecdotal, testimonial, visual, ocular improvements, changes that happened to people who have turned carnivore. And I accumulated them into I think I have two YouTube videos out there about what, as far as floaters, you name it. I've had so many people write in of improvements of so many things. I decided to start showing and posting live, real live, you know, stories, and just to give people hope and say, you know what, this is really true. When your body is healing, it heals everything. It doesn't ignore your eyeballs. It doesn't just say, ah, ha ha, we're leaving your eye problem alone. I'm a firm believer that we are here to heal and evolve as long as we get rid of the toxins.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm going to take this opportunity to do my first ever shilling of the website that I made, which you boost on Instagram. Thank you. The whycarnivore.com.
Oh yeah.
This is a great opportunity to tell people, if you know someone with those eye issues, or if you are having those issues, I encourage going to that website. I'll put it in the show notes, but I just pulled it up right now with, there's a whole list. If you look at the table of contents of all the different eye problems people have healed, blindness, cataracts, diabetic retinopathy, glaucoma, light sensitivity, pink eye, myopia, and all the ones that you mentioned, you can just go in there and click on it and it'll take you down to that section with a bunch of testimonials and videos about it. And that section is pretty much the Dr. Wiedemann show, because that's your thing. You talk about all these eye issues. So that is a place to go for all of those. It's really exciting how many of these things can be fixed. How few people out there know that your vision can actually be healed and your eyesight will get better from the carnivore diet. That's mind blowing to so many people, and myself included. That's completely changed the way I think about food and just health in general, because that seems like it's something that's so separate, but it really does all come together.
Yeah. And I tell people, like, I've had people reach out and they basically have like Coke bottle, nearsighted, very myopic eyes, and they're like, yeah, I'm waiting to get rid of my glasses. And I'm like, yeah, I don't think a 10 diopter myope is thinking that that's going to happen. This isn't like some miracle thing, because, you know, from infancy, we've been fed grains, and this happens even in utero with what your parents have eaten. And I know it sounds crazy, but it's true. And there's a lot more to it than, you know, when you keep going down the rabbit hole, you start understanding that our eyes are not just for vision, and they are connected to our brains. And it is very intricately tied into our circadian rhythm and melatonin and sleep and so many other things. And also the toxic blue light. Once the sun sets, we should be wearing blue blocking glasses so that our screen, and decrease our screen time, the laptops, the tablets, the phones, and even the LED, because, you know, now the lighting in our homes is, I will say it, actually toxic to our eyes and our bodies. Once the sun sets, we really need to be paying attention to this. And that's also part of the health of our eyes. And, you know, I try to not be such a proponent that carnivore diet is the miracle cure, end all be all, because there's a lot of other things tied in, you know, the grounding, spending time outside. We are meant to be outside, and we spend like so little time outside now compared to what naturally we were intended to and we should. And that's all part of, you know, of being healthy is, It's, you know, grounding, walking in bare feet out there too. And it's all, you know, we could just keep going down the rabbit hole, and it's not easy trying to figure this all out.
Yeah. And it really is an adventure of just finding and implementing all of these different tips and strategies into your life that can all create their own improvements in different areas. And like you mentioned, just the importance of your eyes throughout your entire life and how delicate they are. This is one of the first things that starts to show problems when you're not healthy, because it has really little tiny little capillaries in there that when those get inflamed, you probably can describe this much better than I can, but it's basically when you get inflammation from, you know, eating bad food or, you know, staring at screens too much, or, you know, name your bad habit that causes inflammation.
Well, and sugar, the, you know, glycolysis of sugar can damage the lens, and we're talking cataracts, and, you know, you don't want your lens to have to be removed and an acrylic, you know, lens put in there, because now what happens? Now, what's it filtering as far as UV? What kind of natural light are you getting in your eyes when you have your lenses replaced? That there's a lot of concern. So, you know, we've got one vessel to go around with, and we have to try to keep our teeth, keep our eyes, try to, everything is really, really important. Cause I mean, gosh, you could go down the rabbit hole with root canal too, right? Don't get me started on all this stuff, because it's really important to try to open your eyes to everything. You know, and I did a video on mammographies that I don't get mammographies. Again, this is all like crazy stuff to a lot of people. Like, what do you mean? I go, no, I don't irradiate my healthy breast tissue, especially with how high a false positive they come up with. And yeah, I mean, it's a whole, you know, we could talk for hours, Ben.
Yeah. And also just the importance of not letting, and this is actually a good segue, because I was going to bring this up, not getting too down on yourself if you have made some of these mistakes in the past, or if you've done some of these things and you're now starting to regret them because you're learning more. And because right. A lot of us have had these really bad habits for a long time. And I'm only 29 years old, but I for sure, oh my gosh, my youth, I spent so many hours of each of my day just face stuffed in a Game Boy playing Mario and playing Call of Duty with my friends on Xbox till 3 a.m. Sunglasses everywhere, sunscreen always just on me. And it's made me a little bit paranoid now that I've learned all of this, just knowing like how much damage I've done. Like, oh my gosh.
And that's so comical, Ben, because you're so young.
And I know.
Most people don't find this until their 50s or 60s. And it's interesting because Charles Washington had such a great thing that he said is, the lucky ones get fat, because it's typically being overweight, and for vanity reasons, people are like, I got to figure out how to get this off. And they're searching and searching and come about it and attempt it because of that. If you're not lucky enough to get fat, then you just have to wait for this slow suicide to finally get you to a certain level of symptoms, whether it's achy joints or GI issues or diabetes or whatever the health crisis becomes, but typically decades of eating this garbage later, it hits you. So it's the lucky ones that got overweight at a younger age and said, I got to do something about it and find this earlier. But everybody said, I can just tell you, it's like, I mean, I found this when I was 44, and I thought to myself, God, if I had only found this when I was 20, oh my gosh, how much suffering I could have, you know, been out of, and so much horrible. I was in a very bad place. And it's so interesting because now here I am 15 years later as a 15-year carnivore, and I hear so many people that are saying the same thing I said back then. And they're like, God, I wish I had found this earlier like you did. And I said, yeah, but I was saying the same thing back then. And everybody says it because, yeah, when you know, and then you know, you're like, wow, this would have been so awesome to have known this earlier. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a process of forgiving your past self and just, and you know, your family often, because a lot of us, when we were super young, we were, you know, given these habits at a young age, and when they were doing their best, they didn't know that these were unhealthy, right?
Right.
But everyone's always going to wish they would have done it earlier, and you just got to get over that.
Exactly.
And something it's also done for me is really just help motivate me to think very long term and think about my kids and my grandkids, how healthy they're going to be and how I'm going to make them just these little super babies from feeding them these carnivore diets. And they're going to be way healthier than I have, because I did have those early years that probably, you know, limited a little bit of my potential, you know, like everyone yeah. did had those early years that weren't optimal diets. I mean, that's just part of the deal. That's reality. And cause those are very critical years, those young years.
Absolutely.
That you don't get to redo, but we just have to be happy that we found it when we did, and just keep a good attitude that we're going to, you know, use this knowledge to help the future and help make future kids and grandkids healthier than we ever were. And that's, you know, that's a great feeling and a great purpose that we can all strive for.
Yeah, I think that, oh gosh, I say, man, if my, you know, my kids are 25 and 27 now, and gosh, yeah, I so wish I knew back then, you know, what I know now. They would have been weaned on, you know, teething on beef bones and definitely not the grain rice cereal and garbage that the pediatricians told you to do. And I wouldn't have had them vaccinated at all. And there's so many things, but you're right. You can't look back. Hindsight's 20/20. Hear it from an eye doctor, right?
So, that's a whole new purpose for you.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I'd love to get into some other methods we can use to improve our eye health. And I will say that I'm so excited to talk to you about this, because for so long, this has been festering my brain. It's like, I'm sure this is good for me. And I've sort of been talking to other smart people on other episodes of the podcast who are really health focused, sort of running it by them, because it just makes sense to me. I've never really, you know, learned this from a professional, but just doing eye exercises. And here's a perfect example. When I lived in Mexico for several months, the place I had a rooftop. And when the sun went down, a bunch of birds would fly by, like for, you know, 30 minutes, birds would fly by. And I would just intentionally just focus on birds at different distances and do like focus distance changes, you know, like look at something really close and look something far away, and then look at things that are moving, and just giving your eyes that like wide range of focus. I feel like that has to be good for them. It's kind of a workout for your eyes. Is that right? Would you be able to validate that?
Yeah. You know, one of the things that is said that's really closely tied to what you were talking about is the 20/20/20 rule, which is, you know, every, like, say, let's say you're intensely studying or working and you're concentrating up close, every 20 minutes, look past 20 feet for 20 seconds. So it's releasing the contraction of the zonules around the lens. And, you know, I try to relate everything pretty much ancestrally, you know, what would we have naturally been doing? We certainly wouldn't have been staring at a computer and a phone all day. Maybe doing a cave painting, you might have some close work, but you'd go out of the cave and, you know, you'd look out to the horizon. And that really is much more natural. And it comes down to another thing that I just keep writing when I post on Instagram. I say, get outside. Just constant reminder, get outside. It's really the key, because outside we're looking, you know, out to what's called optical infinity, where our eyes are in the relaxed state. We're letting the proper photons in, whether it's at sunrise, midday, or at sunset. All of the angles of the sun actually give our brain a signal, and it's just an amazing, intricate system that you have to, you don't even have to understand it. You just have to trust it and believe it, that we as animals thrive to be in the sun and be outside.
Yeah. And another thing I've been doing, which I recommend to people to check out if you live somewhere you can do this, is to sort of stack these different good health habits that are outside. When I was in Colombia, there was a little park that was on a hill. I would go stand barefoot in the grass, grounding, and looking at that very far distance at the same time. And so you're helping your eyes out. You're doing the grounding, which is helping lower your inflammation. You can throw in some like good deep breathing exercises or some meditation, but you can really mix them all together and have a super powerful, you know, even just 20 minutes, like you said, you can just fit that in. And that's so good for you to just have that every once in a while throughout the day. Because, I mean, a lot of us modern people use electronics. Like, we're doing it right now. The ultimate peak best thing ever would be to just go live in a log cabin and be away from all of this. But, you know, some of us, that's just not practical for our lives. Like, I feel like it's worth, you know, sacrificing a little bit of health by, you know, getting this information out there, just like you. Like, as you're creating all this content, you know it's not optimal, but this is worth it for the greater good. And you're living a life as a technological human being that has these things. So you shouldn't feel bad for every single thing you do, but just do your best. And that's a message you also have preached in your other podcast appearances I've lived to, is just do the best that you can and don't beat yourself up when you can't do it. We're all doing our best here. And it's just about making those steps.
We really, you know, it's the old saying, you know, pick your battles, right? Like, yes, get rid of the plastic containers in your house, use glass, don't heat things in plastic. You know, I try, you know, it's like, I cringe now how many water bottles, like plastic water bottles I've drank out. I was like, oh gosh, no, I have glass tumblers now and reverse osmosis water. And, you know, but, and understanding that the sun on our skin is healthy and it actually decreases types of cancer. And I'm not saying to stay out there for 6 hours and scorch and burn yourself. I'm talking about developing what we call a solar callus, doing it smart where you are gradually increasing your time outside and understanding that it's critical to health. It really is. And, you know, people know about vitamin D, but then they start popping the synthetic D3. They're like, oh, I take D3 and I'm good. I'm like, yeah, no, you're missing out on all the other stuff. You know, it's not just for vitamin D out there in the sun. And it's really, really important. It's like, I think that it's very hard to really wrap your brain around it all. Like, you know, yeah, I should be shutting my Wi-Fi off at night. I haven't really started doing that yet, Ben. but yeah, I'm doing the blue blockers and I'm going down the rabbit hole on sauna and red light. I'm not doing the cold plunge. No, not there, but I live on the ocean and I can jump in and that's pretty much a nice cold plunge.
Good. I mean, that's,
yeah.
You're on the East Coast, right? So it's probably pretty chilly over there. Where I'm from the Northwest where it's really cold. So you're getting your cold plunge if you're jumping in the ocean anywhere over there.
Yeah.
And that's really good stuff. I was going to say something. Just the power of getting sun on your skin. I've experimented with this quite a bit because this was one of my introductions into just thinking about health from a very new way of just going through the steps and finding these different tips to throw in my life. And I've told the story many times before, but I was living in Texas. I had this apartment complex, which had a pool and lawn chairs or the beach chairs that you could lay out in. And so I could really experiment with how my diet was changing, how much sun I could get before I burned. And I realized that when I just took out the seed oils, it was a massive difference. I went from, you know, as a kid, I would burn in 20 minutes in the Washington sun, which is like weak sun. And all of a sudden, I took all the seed oils out, started eating only whole foods, basically like paleo. And I could be out there for like an hour and I wouldn't burn. So, and I just kept continuing these steps and eventually went carnivore. And I remember living in Mexico where like the super intense sun in Cancun, I could lay out there as long as I want. I was out there for like 3 hours and didn't even get burned. And I even took it to the point of like, let's see if I can actually burn myself. Like, is this possible? And so I went out there for just like, peak hours, beach day. And I got a little red, like a little bit of a singe, but it was gone really quickly. It didn't like peel or anything. Like, it just healed up and my body was able to really absorb that quicker. because I was getting all of this nutrition. That was when I was like strict Lion diet too. So I really do think that Lion diet is the peak, and the closer you can get to that, the better. And Lion diet, for those who don't know, it's just beef, salt, and water. It's
ruminant meat, salt, ruminant water. Meat. So
yes.
Lamb. I do pretty much lamb and beef, and I try to stick to lion, or what I call lion adjacent, because some people do perfectly fine with eggs, and some do perfectly fine with salmon and sardines and some seafood, and they like to put that in. So, I like to make sure that people are just trying to figure out what is sustainable for them and what type of variety do they feel they need, but also understanding that sometimes less variety is better because of certain relationships with food. It becomes very freeing to limit your selection down to ruminant meat, salt, and water. But it's really important to understand that the key is consistency, whatever you choose. And also, getting back to what you were saying with the seed oils and the sun and the sunburn, seed oils have a very, very long half-life. It's kind of variable when you look at it, but something like 680 days of a half-life. I mean, this stuff can take years to exit your body. And like, let's say 4 to 6 years. And it's really important to understand that I think so many people go on social media and see some of these success stories where they hold up the huge pants, you know, and people say, oh, I lost 45 pounds in the first month and, you know, all this crazy stuff. And just understand, you're seeing a small, you know, percentage of people that have a very quick response to it. But in general, most of us have spent, not you, Ben, because you found this very young, have spent decades, multiple decades, 4, 5, 6 decades eating an entirely different way. Now you determine and figure out where you need to be with this, and you're not eating the processed foods. Even restaurants, oh my gosh, even when you think you're getting a healthy pan-seared salmon, they squirt that seed oil in the pan and they put it on steaks and chops too. You have to tell them you're allergic to all oil when you go into a restaurant. You think you're getting a healthy grilled ribeye, and you'd be surprised how many restaurants actually either spray it or coat it with some type of not healthy seed oil. And you want to do your best to eliminate it entirely so that you can have these benefits of the health benefits, the skin and the sun benefits. And it's no joke. It's everywhere. And ideally we eat at home because then you have control over your food, but that's not realistic. But I'm pretty good at having a discussion with the wait staff about my allergy. I've got a very special allergy. I say, I love butter. You can use all the butter as long as it's real butter, but I cannot have oil touch my food. I don't even want them putting olive oil on my food because, you know, 80% of them have been proven to be adulterated with the garbage oils, and I have no need for any oil in my body. So it's pretty easy if you just say, please don't let oil touch my food. But because, you know, eating out is part of socialization, and it's part of a lot of people's lives. So you need to be aware of really how to navigate that the best you can.
Yeah. And I remember when I learned that it really, you know, it takes like 4 to 6 years for the seed oil to really be completely out of your body, or at least a trace amount.
Yep.
Like I did that in 2022 is when I officially stopped. So that was only like 2 years ago. So I still have like half of that crap in me. So It's really something that people need to do ASAP, like really stop getting that out. That should be the absolute first thing you do. And another thing that you mentioned in there that I wanted to touch on was this idea of variety, how so many people think that, you know, oh, like I'm losing all this variety if I go carnivore. That's so sad. I just really want people to understand, like, there's good things and bad things, or good places to have variety in your life and other places that maybe shouldn't have variety. And I would argue that the fuel you're putting in your body is not necessarily something that you should be getting that variety from. like there's no other animal on earth that eats like a variety of all these different things. Right. It has one optimal specific diet that makes it feel the best, and it just automatically eats that.
Yeah, most animals out there are eating the same thing every day. And I even say ancestrally, if there was a hunt going on and they were getting the woolly mammoth and they dragged it back, and guess what they went back out and got a couple days later? You're having woolly mammoth again. Here we go. Like, big deal. I'm hungry. This is delicious. Great, right? So there's that. And also the other thing you could say, even when you limit it down to ruminant meat, salt and water, I mean, even just say beef and lamb, you can also have venison, elk, bison, right? There's other things. But even if you just say beef and lamb, you've got flank and ribs, you've got oxtail, you've got beef ribs, you've got ribeye, you've got tenderloin. And then, you know, lamb, there's all sorts of leg of lamb and lamb chops and lamb loin. And it's like, that's variety right there. It really is. And people will say, and to that variety, they've also used that term, oh my gosh, I get so bored. Don't you get bored eating all that meat? I go, no. Do you get bored standing online at the pharmacy waiting for your prescriptions? I don't have to do that. That would be boring to me. Do you get bored waiting in the waiting room of your doctor's office? That would be so boring to me. But you know what? I don't have to do that ever. I don't go to the doctor. That would be really boring. So, you know, you could turn it around like that. And it's just, it's how you look at things.
And just like getting over any other addiction, when you get over that sugar and carb addiction, the meat starts to taste amazing every time. It tastes better and better. Every single meal I have tastes even better, and I'm so excited for it every time. So you really learn to love it. It's not boring after you get over those cravings and you're in ketosis.
Yeah, nope. I'm never bored. Never bored.
Dr. Wiedemann, I know you need to run to a meeting pretty soon here, so we should wrap it up. What is your send-off message for the world here from the bona fide carnivore eye doctor of the internet? I would love to hear just your message to people out there, what they need to take away from this conversation today.
Yeah, you know what? It's actually probably something that I didn't really touch on. And it's just that it's so near and dear to my heart as far as what I went through and what I suffered, is that of get yourself attached to a community of people, of like-minded people. Where, however you do it, there's so many great groups out there. Dr. Kiltz has one. I have a private membership group. I go live 5 days a week with my members and we talk, you can ask questions. You become, this becomes your own like little family, because we feel very isolated, and addictions love isolation, and support and community is the opposite of addiction. And just get yourself engaged in meeting people and understanding that this is really normal and other people are out there doing the same thing, and you will emerge just so incredibly thrilled that you did.
I love it. And I will leave the links to all of your social medias and your website where people can go find your own membership groups that you do. I know you do retreats also, which sounds super cool.
Yeah, right here on the beach, I host little beach retreats. And yeah, amazing. I try to do everything I can to get people just so immersed in this type of lifestyle that it becomes normal and healthy and happy.
Absolutely love it. And I can't wait for more people to find that and learn more about you. Dr. Wiedemann, I appreciate you so much for coming today. And I look forward to staying in touch. I'm sure I want to do another one in the future and get even more into the technical eye stuff, because we sort of explored some other tangents today. So we'll keep in touch for that.
That sounds great, Ben. Thanks for having me.
All right. I'll talk to you later.
Okay. Bye.